Today's show is brought to you by Bogart Extractors, an industry leader in hydrocarbon extraction. Over the last decade, Bogart has implemented many new technologies which have helped to revolutionize the way hydrocarbon extractions are performed. Each unit is made with sanitary stainless steel and is built and tested right here in the USA. Their certified system for use in licensed facility meet all NFPA and ASME standards and undergo peer reviewed by third-party engineers to ensure facilities and its employees can operate safely. Beyond simply making a functional extractor, Bogart has many additional features which make extraction faster and more cost-effective compared to other manufacturers. These features include hydrocarbon failing films to supercharge evaporation rates, heavy-duty explosion-proof pumps for flammable liquids and vapors, industrial chillers capable of maintaining large tanks of solvent at temperatures below 60 Celsius. They also offer extensive tech support and consultation services. So whether you need to set up an extraction lab from scratch or you just need some replacement gaskets, give them a call at 855-553-3887 or check out their website at www.bogart.com.
Welcome to the Hemp Show Deep Dive. I'm Mark Rustelli, the host of the Hemp Show. With me, I've got Jessica Ferranti with STM Canna, and I've got Franco Smith, one of our team members. And we're just here to chat and have a good time. And we just got this conversation started when I jumped on with Jessica, talking about your father-in-law's artwork on the wall, which is killer. And I'm going to have to post some pictures of this. Yeah, I'm going to definitely have to post some pictures of this because super cool stuff. I'm a big, big fan of art. Sorry that we started the conversation that way, but no. When I saw it, I was like, I got to get that stuff on my wall.
Yeah, no, don't be. I felt the same way. It's actually neat. He, like I said, for the most part today, you know, he really just paints for fun, but at some point he did actually do some drawings for Marvel many, many years ago. So be sure to send some stuff over to you.
Wow. That is awesome. But I want to get into the most important thing that we could talk about here, which is what we were just talking about, because your wife is 39 weeks, and we'll get into hemp stuff later, but your wife's 39 weeks and she's having contractions right now. So you have a baby that's about to pop.
Pretty much. Yes.
All right. So if we got to cut this short, if we got to just let me know, just honestly, you could just dip out at any time. You don't even have to say bye. Obviously I know the urgency. So do you know boy or girl?
We're actually having a little girl.
Excellent. So you're going to have a little crazy. You've already got little crazy man. I've got a little crazy man as well. And I haven't told you this yet, cause it's actually very new. Oh, but my wife is 11 weeks.
Oh my gosh. Yep. Congratulations.
Yep. So she's going to be popping. The estimated date is 9/9. So we will see how all that goes. Now, one of the things I know we're not even talking about hemp at all, but, and we will get there. But I don't want to know the sex. I would rather not know, but she wants to know. And the problem
is she going to find out and you're not going to know the whole?
Well, she wants to find out. I don't want to find out because there's very few surprises in life. And if I could do anything to make that special day any more surprising, I would be totally down for that. But she wants to know. And it's like, if you find out, then I guarantee I'm going to find out at some point, because you're going to tell your mom, you're going to tell a friend, they're going to mess up and they're going to talk to me about it. Or we're going to receive a gift in the mail and that gift's going to be blue or pink. So one way or another, there's zero chance that I make it 7 months or whatever, 6 months, and not find out by somebody else screwing up.
Yep. The only way is to really just have your wife maybe the only person to know, right? Because yeah, once it gets to the grapevine, it's gone.
Yeah.
It'll come back. There's no surprises.
It will work its way around back to me one way or another. But
yeah,
congratulations. Okay. And man, you are about to be in for a very interesting week. So one of the, as you already know, one of the best days of your life. One of the best days of my life. I'm sure you've already had the best day of your life, about to have another second.
Yeah, I am absolutely thrilled. I'm even more excited too that we have one boy, you know, we'll have one girl. And it's just different, you know, having a little boy versus having a little girl, they're different. And I'm just excited to kind of see her personality and all things come along with it. So yeah, I am elated. I'm on cloud nine. And what's nice about this meeting today is that while, you know, I have a wife downstairs in the middle of contractions during, you know, a little bit of a snowstorm, it's better than the last time we talked when simultaneously I had someone doing the roof.
Well, good thing you don't have all those.
Yeah.
I mean, you are battling a snowstorm right now. Have you had any of the power issues, power outages? That, I mean, half the country right now is kind of without power. They're sitting in freezing temperatures. It's crazy to watch as it's like 70 degrees out here in California. Sorry, I don't mean to rub it in.
A little bit. It's okay.
Well, Franco here, he's in Cape Town, South Africa.
You're in Cape Town?
Yeah, that's right. Yeah.
No kidding. What's the weather like out there? Can't imagine as bad as it is out here.
It's been quite pleasant the last couple of weeks. Yeah, just nice sunshiny days.
But let's do this. Let's shift gears. Let's talk about hemp stuff, cannabis stuff, all the above, STM. Now, where I would like to start is I'd like to start where we met with the marijuana show. So that was an interesting experience. And I will just give a synopsis and then we can kind of dive in there. But we met about, what is it now, 3 years ago? It seems like a lifetime ago. I think it was 2017, right?
It must have been 2017. Because
I think it was the end.
Yeah, what had to have happened around 2017 because my son was born in 2016. And that was right on the time that I was living in Denver to go build STM out.
It was definitely 2017. My son was born in 2018 and my wife was pregnant when we were on the show.
November of 2017 is when we met.
Yeah. Yeah. So, all right. We, Jessica and I, got casted on the Hemp Show. The Hemp Show is, for those of you that have not seen it, you can definitely check it out. Or sorry, the marijuana show. We're on the Hemp Show. Oh man, I'm already messing up. I need to go smoke a bowl. But anyways, all right. So we got on to the marijuana show. We had never met before. It was filmed out in Taos, New Mexico. So that winter, we went out to Taos, New Mexico, and it was freezing. We stayed at the whole crew, everybody that was there on the show stayed in an RV park, where we all stayed in our own little Airstream RVs, which was very cool because we got to go after all the filming was done, we got to go hang out at a little campfire and kind of jam and chill and meet everybody. And that's where we became friends. That's where we met. Yep. Now the purpose of the show was to kind of get money, pitch your business and get funded. It was put on by Wendy and Karen. So I still stay in touch with them. You know, they're on the advisory board for Cantrade. So they're still there, but that was a very interesting experience. I didn't know what to expect. And so what was it for you?
The same. Definitely very interesting. You know, I think nonetheless, it was certainly like a once in a lifetime experience. And I think that one of my favorite sort of takeaways was that, you know, it was a unique opportunity in that we got to sort of meet each other when all of our companies were really in such early stages. And I found that to be really intriguing. That we got a chance to kind of learn where everyone's roots, you know, came from and how they sort of got to their you know, to starting their business. And I think that at the end of the day, the, you know, like the relationships that we got from the show, you know, I think stay true to today. And I think that was one of the biggest values is just being able to work alongside others, you know, pushing to be successful in the cannabis space from scratch. And it's been really tremendous to kind of see everybody progress, you know, over the last few years.
Yeah, I'm right there with you. I mean, one of the biggest takeaways from the show is just the relationships with the people, right? That we gained on there. I mean, not everybody. I'm not tight with everybody on the show, but you know, tight with you. We chat not as often as we should, but we chat several times a year. I still stay in touch with Heather, with Chris. I stay in touch a lot with Todd, with Hardcore Security. So yeah, very, very interesting. Had a blast. I mean, it was crazy because you mentioned life once in a lifetime experience. In all reality, if we didn't do it, how it would just make our lives more boring, you know? It
for sure. Yeah. This is, you know, I mean, for one, I don't know. I love to travel. Luckily, you know, I've been blessed with STM where I have been able to travel, obviously, before, you know, COVID hit. I was traveling all over the place, but I don't think that had this experience, you know, not occurred, that I would have ever been to New Mexico or had the opportunity even to go, you know? So that was really being out in the middle of the desert. And, you know, it's, and too, being on set, you know, is an experience in its own, you know, and filming and having sort of somewhat reality show, somewhat scripted, somewhat just craziness thrown together.
Yeah. Well, you mentioned on set. Now, I want to talk about one thing. So it wasn't necessarily all set because it was at Wendy and Karen's house in Taos, New Mexico, which we need a virtual walkthrough of that house that people can take when they're watching this episode. Because before we mention anything about it, I thought the place was very cool. I thought it was incredibly cool, incredibly interesting, very unique. Now, for everybody who's listening or to this, picture the Lord of the Rings Hobbit house. Picture that. And then what that would look like if humans were living in it.
Too. Lots of crystals. Very, I don't know. I couldn't even describe it. I think honestly a virtual walkthrough would be the only way, but just unique. One of my favorite parts actually to the house, aside from just the wide open space, to me that it just breathes such like fresh air. And I don't know, you just feel so like natural and not sort of like constricted. But one of my favorite parts of the house is at nighttime. Right. They're right in the middle of the desert. And they had that giant, giant glass, kind of like half circle glass at the top back of the house. And when it was nighttime, you just saw the sky shine through there, you know, moon and all, just like almost like right in front of your face. And it just lit up the room. I mean, yeah, that's always intrigued me. This was definitely something that I think I'll remember for a lifetime. Just in that I also really love to see like unique houses with unique architecture. And that house just, that's something that stands out in your mind forever. You don't see something like that and forget.
Yeah. Well, I mean, if you remember, because we're out in Taos, New Mexico, and there's very little light pollution, I wanted to see the stars really bad the whole time we were there. Cause I love looking up in the sky. I've got telescopes. I think there's one behind me. But yeah, I do that constantly. So I even monitor, check out Jupiter, Saturn all the time. But there was a damn full moon every time. And it's really hard to see the stars when there's basically a full moon or not totally full, but pretty full for several days. So that killed my stargazing. But I want to give everybody a bit more of a visual of the place. So, all right, so picture a dome, large dome shaped house, kind of like a, I want to say it's, what's it called? Not El Adobe, the kind of the mud style, like South American kind of feel to it. But inside is an enchanted forest. The entire house is kind of one open dome where all of the rooms lead off from the central dome space. And they all still kind of connect. They never actually go into kind of their own room. Like even if you're in the master bedroom, there's still kind of like an opening to the dome in a sense, not necessarily an opening you can walk through, but an opening you could see through. So the dome, it had this very open feel to it, but there's an enchanted forest in the middle with a cool koi pond in the middle. Yeah. So, oh my God.
In the middle of the house. What I love too, there's a lot of like, almost kind of like a lot of rocks that almost like it was, there were parts of the house that had like natural caves. So it wasn't like a cave opening. It's like the natural feel to it was so neat. And all the lush greenery. It was, it kind of reminded me, what was that that movie with Pauly Shore, Biodome. just like the openness, and that you're in an environment within another environment. And yeah, it was really cool.
I literally just watched a movie about Biodome, the movie Biodome, and then about the real Biodome.
Right? Are you talking about the crazy one where there was a lot of...
Oh yeah, they just came out. That was the one. Yeah, I saw that one. I also saw a different one too. That was more about the movie than and not, less about the dome. Very, very interesting. But all right, jumping off that topic. So that's where we met. We met in Taos, New Mexico about 3 years ago with a very interesting, unique experience. And then from then, we've just stayed in contact. So, you know, me with my edible brand, Highway Brand, and then CanTrade, and then now one of our affiliates with CanTrade, what we're doing right now today, the Hemp Show. And then you have been with STM Canna the entire time since then. So if you listen to the previous Hemp Show where we were on for 15 minutes, so some people, you know, will know a bit about STM, but tell me about STM. Tell me about how you got into the cannabis space in general, what that experience has been like. And then I'll have 1,000 questions for you once we get back.
Intimidating. Okay. Yeah, no worries. So what STM does, just a quick synopsis, we are a cannabis equipment manufacturing company. Primarily our focus is on hemp and marijuana post-harvest processing. So basically that means that anything, you know, once the flower is cultivated, you know, dried and cured, any process following that is what we start to, you know, like develop new technologies for. We're mostly known in the market for, you know, pre-roll machines and grinders and things of that nature. How did I get in the space? You know, that was purely intentional. I went out of my way to find, you know, my own place in the industry. I have been a consumer since my early teens. And for me, when I was younger,
which was only like 8 years ago, right? I always joke around anytime someone says something that ages, I always come back with some stupid comment like that.
Well, honestly, I stopped counting the years. I'm 29 and I had started, and I wasn't a heavy smoker by any means, but I started like trying, you know, when I was 13. I started really smoking around like the age of 15, more like consistently. But, you know, when you're young, you don't, especially, you know, the environment was very different with marijuana back in the day. And hemp wasn't even a thing.
You just steal it from your older brother like me.
Oh, yeah, exactly. No, 100%.
It's a supply that's always there. You always know where it's at. You just got to be very careful about not letting it know.
I was lucky enough that my older brother, he was totally okay with sharing. So I never had to take. There was always just, you know, a stock available, which was really nice.
Very nice older brother.
He was amazing. But so when I was around 15, I started, you know, consuming more on like a more frequent basis. And, you know, when you're younger, again, the environment was very different. So medicinal cannabis, you know, was really not something that was like prevalent anywhere, especially on the East Coast in New Jersey, you know, where I had grown up in my older years. And, you know, I think for me, I believed at the time I was just smoking recreationally. And so as I got older and I understood more, you know, about the medicinal, you know, components of marijuana and, you know, all the different ways that cannabinoids, you know, play into your overall well-being and health. It was at that time that I started to understand all of that, that I realized, you know, I've suffered from depression most of my life. And so now I kind of look back and realize that the marijuana was really sort of like my kind of guiding light as far as understanding more about myself and mental health. And that, you know, now I realize more than ever that I was really using it medicinally without realizing, you know? So that was quite interesting to me. And the more and more I started to understand, you know, just the power of cannabis as a whole, hemp, marijuana, you know, the whole plant itself, the more I want to be involved. I didn't know how I wanted to be involved. I didn't know, frankly, had I known these opportunities would have been on the horizon, I probably would have went to school for something like this. I went to school for cooking.
Right. Even then, when you went to school for it, it's not like much actually existed related to it, unless you got into a field that could transfer over. Like, you know, let's say Yeah, like biomedical something, some chemistry stuff, horticulture type things. I did ag business, which I guess technically works, right? But it had nothing to do with the act of cannabis.
Yeah. Because had I known, right, that was an opportunity, I probably would have, you know, gone straight into, you know, learning more of more things that would relate to this business. But, you know, at the time, gosh, I was 19 in college in Miami. The last thing I would have ever anticipated is that cannabis would be its industry, you know, like a full-on powerhouse industry, and that I would have the opportunity to be involved. So in earlier in my career, it wasn't even a blimp on my radar. It was just something I used for medical recreational purposes, you know, self, you know, diagnose in that sense, and in terms of being able to use it for medicinal purposes. And I really just spent my time just teaching others, like anyone that was willing to listen, I'd be willing to talk to them and teach them about cannabinoids, you know, your CB1, your CB2 receptors, and, you know, the homeostasis that you know, these natural plants are able to put you in. So, you know, I had such a deep passion for it, but I didn't really have an outlet. And then over the years, I got into sales, and I just found a passion for startups.
This is when you started selling marijuana. When you're talking about, because you were talking about marijuana, and then as you say, I got into sales. I'm like, okay, what kind of sales?
Probably elaborate for those listening. No, I got into sales actually to help pay for the catering business I started when I was like 21 or 22. I came home to New Jersey from Miami, and I was hellbent on starting a catering company. But, you know, I was a naive 22-year-old kid. I didn't really know how to raise money, you know, and how to fund my business properly. And frankly, I started to lose interest when I was living in Miami and I was doing all these like celebrity parties and all this exciting different events. I actually did some stuff with the NFL. I found I had so much, I had so many things that were exciting to me. And when I moved back to Jersey, it was like, there's not, unless I go to New York City, which now you're talking a much bigger investment and you know, you need a lot more resources for that. Jersey catering wasn't super exciting to me. So I started doing some sales in the meantime. I started insurance sales, and then
I think that was ultra exciting.
You know what? No, nothing negative. You know, I think for a lot of people, it's not exciting. But for me, it was different. I never, ever saw myself as someone in sales, especially not someone who kind of wore a suit. I was a chef, you know, I was used to being in the back with everyone that's tattooed, smoking weed and cooking, you know, in the middle of the night. Like that was the sort of environment I was used to. But when I got into sales and I started particularly working in insurance, what I really found was two things. Number one, you know, I've always enjoyed helping people. And so, you know, insurance, like, oh, that's not a big deal, but I was working for Aflac, the duck. And
I think literally when you said Aflac, everybody just instantly pictured the Aflac duck in their head. Doing the Aflac, great marketing.
I mean, a little bit crazy, but it was damn good marketing. But the one thing about, you know, selling that kind of insurance was that I was helping people who, you know, would be under stress with like medical bills, and their families would like suffer really severely financially without these types of programs. So it was just an opportunity for me to educate people and help make sure their families were financially stable, you know, should something happen. So it wasn't to me like I'm selling car liability insurance. I was selling things to cancer patients, you know, to people, to everyday people as well. But I found a lot of empowerment in that. And the other thing I found is that I always knew I was competitive. I didn't really foresee myself ever being competitive in a professional manner. You know, I was always kind of competitive in sports and I mean, generally other things, but, you know, never in a work capacity. And in my first year, I don't know how, I was a hungry kid, but my first year, I became number one in the state, and I beat out like every senior worker there. Like even the guys who've been there for like 45 years, I beat them out. And ended up like talking on stage and everything, which terrified me. I have terrible stage fright. And I just found
you do great. You do great though.
Thank you. Thanks so much.
The people in the audience never have any idea how nervous you are.
Thank God. Thank God.
Unless you tell them. So never tell them that. So
just delete the last couple minutes. They'll never know. That's at least the hope. But yeah, I just found it's like, you know, I got to enjoy what I was doing. I got an opportunity to teach people, you know, like be in some in education in some form. I got a chance to talk to people, be social, which I also love. At the same time, I got to be really competitive and I found a lot of ways early on that the company was like missing a lot of things, like a lot of tools that could help the salespeople sell better. And so because they didn't exist, I created them. And so I like kind of built my own business in that sense around like just like generally how it operates. Like you're very independent in that sense. Like they give you some things and then you're kind of on your own. So I built, you know, everything that I needed and I was like, wow, I kind of really enjoy building stuff from scratch. And from there I worked in investments. And
real quick, before we jump off that, it seems to me like it's you use competitive as the word. I don't necessarily know if I don't quite like see it as you being that competitive. It seems like you are just a doer. Like, especially when you come into this business, you come into these new businesses and you see that they're lacking certain things. These things are going to make them better and they're going to make them more competitive in the market. Mm-hmm. But you like to just fix those things. You're like a people process person.
Thanks. Yeah, that's definitely a different way to look at it. That's a good point. I mean, I'm definitely competitive, but someone recently actually tried to change my perspective on that too and said, you know, yes, you're competitive, but I think it's more just ambitious, you know, and I have a
driven.
One of my biggest challenges is I try to be ambitious and be 100% in every aspect of my life. And, you know, when you're running a company that's growing, you know, very fast and you have, you know, a small child at home and another one on the way and, you know, there's a lot going on. It's tough to be 100% at all times, but I do my best and I enjoy consistently getting myself to the next level. I enjoy getting myself into, you know, places that help me sort of thrive and learn and grow my abilities and skill sets. So.
Improving yourself, improving the people around you, improving your business. I mean, that's honestly, there's one real commonality that I've seen between a lot of people that are very driven, that are running businesses, is they're constantly seeking those things. They're constantly seeking, you know, further education, right? When nighttime rolls around, it's not, hey, let's throw on, you know, 6 straight hours of television and just let our brain kind of rot to mush. It's what can I do to progress my business, myself, my family, you know, from this day to the next day. Right.
My mind is, you know, like I try to go in the shower sometimes. And it's funny. Someone I used to work with was telling me like, I come up with my best ideas, you know, in the shower, in the bath. And honestly, I had to buy a waterproof notepad to put in my shower. Cause every time I'm like, you know what, what's that?
That's cool.
Oh.
Yeah. And yeah, so it's like every time I'm in the shower, I'm like, all right, you know what? I'm going to take like 10, 15 minutes to turn my brain off and, you know, relax for a few minutes. Like I'll put some essential oils in the shower and I put them in and, you know, last a long time, about 2 minutes. And then immediately, it's so strange. It's like,
even when you're like, I had the killer idea. I had a killer idea. What was it? And then you're like, oh gosh. And you're trying to piece it back together, but it's gone. It's
instant. And that's why I'm like, you know what? I need to get notes for this. So I got a notepad and now I write my stuff down. And let me tell you, that person was right. Because I think of like a lot of my initiatives and different things I think of are in the shower, in those moments I'm trying to relax.
Now, what I've noticed, because so I do exactly that. I don't do it in the shower. I noticed a few things. One, definitely, if I don't write it down, if I don't do it right away, it's gone. I maybe have like a few minutes of grace period. Sometimes I can remember it in the future. Sometimes, yeah. But for the most part, I can't remember the idea in its entirety and how it would work together. The second thing that I notice is that it helps you to filter through bad ideas as well. Because as long as you get all the ideas on paper, you know, something that you're super excited about one day and I got it on paper and then I review it a week later, and I'm like, that's not so good. And if I'm not happy, if I'm not still jazzed about it a week later or 2 weeks later, or hell, if I'm not still jazzed about it 6 months later, it probably wasn't a good idea.
Yeah. But, yeah. I think a lot of initiatives, like different things to do and launch, but also I find the biggest, most prevalent thing that happens, I find solutions to issues that are plaguing me, mostly company wise, you know? And so I think a lot of it's because, you know, you're in the mode of, I'm in the mode at least of sort of attempting to like meditate and clearing my mind. And, you know, if you're familiar generally with meditation, right? When you clear your mind, when you're self-aware, when you have mindfulness, your brain is able to sort of kind of cleanse itself. And then, you know, your brain is able to do the work to contemplate and come up with better ideas and work through solutions. So I think there's a very clear connection, you know, between trying to meditate and be mindful and coming up with all these solutions. It's just ironic because, you know, I'm at that point, I'm trying to relax. And instead my brain is like, oh my God, we could do this. Oh, we could do this. And I'm like, can I just shower? Like, why?
I'm totally with you there. I've got kind of two forms of meditation / clearing the mind that I do. Every morning I work out like a maniac. So I hit the gym this morning at 6 and I've been going crazy ever since, but that helps to slow my mind down because otherwise too much energy, too much in it. The second one is actual meditation, you know, trying to do tons of different things. One is yoga style meditation. Others are actual like intentional meditation where I'm either listening to something or walking myself through some type of meditation routine, all with the purpose of trying to. Now, those ones I struggle to do more. I struggle to do as often just because
the mind-based items.
Well, it for me, a lot of the times it's trying to get over like, I need to clear my mind. There's too many things in it. I'm running a mile a minute and nothing is actually getting done because I'm giving my mental attention to 10 different things at the same time, as opposed to focusing all on one thing in one instant. Right. So I realized that I need to do it, but then I'm always like, well, it's going to take 10 minutes or it's going to take 15 minutes. I don't know. I don't have the time. Like, so that one I struggle to, but when there's something else attached to it, where it's like I said, working out, different type of meditation or yoga has a little bit more. So that's more, it's because of bringing the physical and the mental together. So when it's strictly mental, I struggle more and actually doing those things.
I can actually relate to that quite a bit. The reason I try to meditate sometimes in the shower is because I do feel like I kind of need like complete, like submersion, you know, in like what I'm doing. It's tough for me just like to stop and just meditate in a random space. Like the shower, like the noise in the shower tends to help, right? Like the background noise.
The physical stimulation of the heat and the water on your body. Yeah. I mean, that's
in case nobody's coming in the.
Exactly. Right. You're able to kind of create your own environment in that sense and not get as distracted, at least with external things in your environment. Right. Yeah. For me, I have a harder time doing like the physical stuff without having something else involved. So, like, for example, it's not that I don't like working out. Like, I definitely don't mind it, but it's harder for me to just do it unless it's sort of like, tied into something else. Like, for example, I can work out all day if I'm playing sports and working out. Oh yeah.
That's where that competitiveness pops in right there.
Yeah. To like lift weights or just sit there and like do crunches is honestly the most like boring shit to me ever. Yeah. I have a hard time staying, like my mind runs, you know, constantly. Like I'm doing a million things at once. So I feel like it's not mentally stimulating enough for me. So I have to find other ways to be creative as to how to out. And yeah.
So what I think it comes down to, Jessica, is there's a lot of studies kind of done on this but gamification. And this is what a lot of businesses try to implement, especially apps. Like apps try to do gamification all the time. But the reason I say that is because I am totally with you. The reason I'm so, I work out so hard and I do so much physical activity is because I've done it my whole life. And it's always been because it's been attached to some type of a game. And sports is easy because that's competitive nature kicking in. You want to be the best, so you're going to train the hardest and compete against the best. But for me, it started with skateboarding. So I was a skater kid, and you know, my buddy over there, we go out skating. I want to do the best trick. I want to jump that 10 stair. Like, so that was part of the athleticism, the gamification, just developing the physical activity while I was younger. But nowadays, and the reason I say gamification is because I could not for the life of me walk into a Globo gym and, you know, sit there, everybody puts their headphones on and just work out for, I'm going to work out for 2 hours. We got bench and back, chest and, you know, whatever.
They're like, it's leg day. And I'm like,
oh my gosh.
I'm so interested in what you're talking. I will listen all day and I respect it. But to me, it stops there.
Like, right.
If so, you can't, like, I will listen, but, and it'll be entertaining, but I won't have the same interest in doing it myself.
Yeah. So the reason I say, so now I can't do that, but that's why I do CrossFit. Now, CrossFit, I like it. The reason though, is because gamification. So when you work out at a CrossFit gym, they write your scores on the board. And then if you go there consistently, you know, everybody at the gym and you kind of feed off them. They feed off you. And so I'll give you an example. So like today, this morning, 6 a.m., how to work out. Workout consisted of a warm-up, little bit of strength stuff. So today we did some snatches, but then at the very end, they have the WOD, the workout of the day. And today's one was a hard one. And everybody in the gym is doing the exact same workout. And the workout it's typically either scored off like the amount of reps you complete or the time you complete the workout in. So there's always something that's tangible that you write up on the board that you're battling the people in the gym, you know, that are comparable to you. So that's why I love doing it. I go there because of the gamification. It's really the same thing as going to Globo Gym. But in this case, I'm battling against my peers. We're making each other better.
It's a secondary activity. See, now I could do something like that in the sense that since there's a secondary activity to it, I'm more apt, you know, to try something like that. The only problem is, I like to try new things all the time, but I know, unless I was extremely dedicated, that it would take me a long time to beat anybody on that list. And that would just beat me up probably mentally for a little while.
Oh, see, you're starting off with a mental barrier. No matter where you go in, you're gonna have people that are comparable to you. You don't have to shoot for the stars right away, right? Just incremental steps.
Do you know me?
Right, but you're talking about if I can't get to the stars, I'm not going to go at all, right? But if you shoot for the stars, you might not hit the stars, but you might hit the moon. You might hit Mars. Heck, we just hit Mars yesterday.
I'm well aware of how terrible that sounds. But I think at the end of the day, if it was something that, okay, I'll give you an example. I try to stay, instead of working out my body, luckily, you know, I'm blessed. I'm still 29, you know, and I have some time to whip myself into shape. So I'm fully aware that I need to work out and I need to get better. I did very well in the summer when I was working out. I was running like someone was chasing me down the block. But the second the weather kicked in and it was snowing, you know, my ass was inside. So I have to find some sort of alternative. But I do focus on like working my brain out. You know, as corny as it may sound, I do, because my brain is my most important muscle. So I
don't think what you just said right there, I don't think people understand that one or relate to that one as much as they should, because your brain is your most important muscle. And just like going to the gym, you need to work your brain out.
Yeah, it's true. You know, your brain, even when it comes to mindfulness, the way I often explain it to people. And when I was really frequently meditating and I had more time, and, you know, before kids, of course, not an excuse, I'm getting back to it. But when I was able to really do it without any interruptions, that, you know, I found myself so elevated in terms of my career, my mental capacity. You know, I mean, it's so powerful. And the analogy that I give is, you wouldn't leave your car running right outside all day every day. Because what it eventually happens, your car would die, right? You'd burn out. Your brain's the same thing. When you go to sleep, your brain is still going through REM. You know, your body is resting, but virtually your brain is not. You're going through REM, you're dreaming. There's still a lot of cognitive things that are going on at the time that doesn't really give your brain that type of rest. So like mindfulness and meditation, that's you turning off the ignition, you know? And I found so often that when you focus on that part of your mind, even if that's all that you do is just meditation, I mean, it really does affect every, you know, part of your mind, body, you know, your being, and it translates, you know, to work and personal. So yeah, I will admittedly say that I put a lot more emphasis towards, you know, my mental health and my, like, my brain strength and functioning capacity there than I have physical. So now that I have that, you know, sort of down, physical's next.
The O Cannabis Conference and Expo returns to Toronto June 1st through the 3rd, and there are still good booth locations available. This exciting event is free for cannabis retailers and will feature Tommy Chung receiving a Lifetime Achievement Award at the O Cannabis Industry Awards. For more information about exhibiting or to register to attend, go to ocannabis.com. That's OCANNABIZ.com.
But. Right. I think your analogy was spot on. The way I've always looked at it is I do all these things to work out my body when I was an athlete. Mm-hmm. But I don't do the same things to work out my mind. And if you can't figure out mindfulness and being able to kind of control your mind controls you. So if you have, like I said earlier, you've got hundreds of things going on in your head, your mind is controlling you. If you can't shut those things off and you can't shut your mind off, then you have no control over your mind. And in that case, it's very hard to be productive, to get certain things done, all the above. But yeah, that's the way I've looked at it for a while. And I struggle with it every day. It's a constant battle.
Absolutely. I mean, you can work out all you want. And I think working out is really powerful too, because there is a form of meditation in working out in itself, you know? So I think there's a lot of power, and that's why, you know, I've held a lot of weight towards improving, like, you know, my physical health that way. But, you know, mental strength is different. And I think, you know, as you age, right, your body ages and you might lose some of the, you know, physical things you had when you were younger, but you know,
that's happening.
I'm nearing my 30s. I get it.
You haven't even crossed the 30 threshold. Oh,
I will this year. So that's it. Once I cross, there's no going back.
Yep. There's no going back. That's everybody. We're only going one direction. We haven't figured out how to go backwards, but okay. So we got off on a giant tangent, but I do recall where that tangent came from. And just before we get back to that, I just want to make one comment. Earlier, you mentioned when was the first time you smoked weed? How old were you?
13.
13. Yeah. Okay. So I was 12.
Now 13. I look back and it's like kind of disturbing to me that I was that young,
right?
but I was a kid. I was 13. I was at a party with older kids and, you know, smoked my first joint and literally just laid on the trampoline and watched the stars all night. And I can't say that I was upset about it.
Well, so I find it interesting, and, you know, don't advocate for any children smoking. There's evidence that brains aren't fully developed, and, you know, it should definitely not happen till your brains are fully developed and you're at an age where you are educated about what you're smoking. But I know so many people, I've talked to so many people that are predominant people. We're talking business owners, you know, very highly productive people that smoked in their early teens, you know? So it's not the end of the world, right? So parents, just a note, if there's any parents listening here, don't steer them in that direction. I'm just saying it's not the end of the world. You don't need to throw the hammer down. If your 12 or 13 year old is smoking at a young age, there is a high likelihood that they will turn out just fine. So sorry, just wanted to say that real quick, because I found it interesting how many people that I've encountered. But anyways, the tangent that we got off on was the ideas that come to you in the shower when you're trying to fix problems, exactly. Problems related to the business, to STM. And, you know, this is the deep dive. We, like I said, there's no formula. We don't even have to talk about hemp, but wanted to kind of get us back there to where you got in the space. You basically said you talk about sales and then fixing problems and just started to fall in love with it.
Yeah, absolutely. So I fell in love with a number of things. I fell in love with education. I fell in love with, you know, with sales in general and that competitive and ambitious, you know, environment. And I more so even fell in love with just the ability, you know, to kind of like play to my creative side. I think in culinary, that was something that played to all those same sort of strengths. Like, for example, you know, you're cooking, you get to create, you know, different new recipes and, you know, create your plating, right? And presentation. And there's also a lot of course, like business aspects to it when you own your own catering company and whatnot. And I found, you know, as I progressed in my sales career, that a lot of those same things and skill sets I had prior, I was able to apply. And the way that I found, I think, kind of my niche was when I was working early in insurance and in catering. And like I said, I had to create everything, you know, on my own from scratch. And I fell in love with that part. Was now I'm able to be creative, but in a totally different aspect, in a totally different way, and apply it, you know, towards something I hadn't really ever thought of earlier. So, you know, I found as I moved from company to company that like I had a passion for like coming into a company that either didn't provide a lot of structure or was a startup. And so I worked in different industries from like insurance and investments to voice over IP, to like artificial intelligence and recruiting. I just kind of jumped around every...
That's a pretty wide spectrum right there.
Yeah, it was. And the whole goal for me was that like I love learning. So I just wanted to learn everything. And I felt like the more... I always knew I was going to be in business. Whether it was a restaurant back in the day, you know, or the cannabis business, I always knew I was going to be in business. So the primary thing for me was I have this opportunity to work in a bunch of different industries and learn, you know, and take from each of these companies and each of these different, you know, vastly different industries and take that experience and apply it to something that I love. So I was able to take concepts that don't exist in certain industries and apply them to others to produce solutions that were out of the box, you know, because they were from somewhere else. So I found, my gosh, like that's really where, you know, a lot of passion of mine is. And, you know, I'm still young and I don't know per se, like what I'll be doing as I move through my career, you know, over the years. You know, I love STM. I don't know if I'll be here for another 20 years or so. You know, I tend to work with startups and eventually, you know, move on to another startup. But I think just being able to work and have the opportunity with like I do with STM, where same thing, I came into the company where it was just an idea and a concept, and I was able to, you know, do what I love, which is take an idea, you know, and transfer it, you know, from idea and concept all the way through to revenue. And yeah, it's been exciting. And I know you asked earlier how I got there, right?
Right. Well, to comment on that, I mean, no better industry for that. I mean, 10 years ago, what was there, right? You get into an industry, like, let's just say, I'm going to go into the beverage, the alcohol industry, you know, beverages. Yeah. And like, they've got legacy systems, right? It's kind of done one way. There's only so much innovation that's happening. But when you talk about cannabis, we talk about hemp, we're talking about something that's been, it's had its innovation stifled for a long time. So there was so much progression that needs to be done, or that had to be done, and still needs to be done. There's new technologies being created all the time, right? Then there's kind of a different look because we're starting from scratch in a lot of cases with the industry. So you don't have to deal with legacy systems nearly as much as you would have to in basically any other industry that makes money. Also, it's just a great place for someone that's creative and driven to be.
Yeah, absolutely. I kind of... I look at the cannabis industry akin to like the boom of like the World Wide Web, you know, it just the tech boom. I mean, yeah, you're in a new industry where you know, it's obviously very different in that, well, maybe not as different. You know, I think a lot of regulations, I mean, we're still trying to regulate, you know, social media companies and you know, deal with technology age, but there's still a lot of, you know, there's a lot less restrictions there versus some of the restrictions that we deal with in the cannabis space. But it is such a unique opportunity in that I'm working at a startup in a startup industry. We're all working at startups in a startup industry.
Yeah.
That is something incredibly unique. And it's not something that is like a small, minute industry. It's not something that's kind of, you know, facing issues where it's progress is being stifled. Of course, there are limitations when it comes to like, you know, federal legalization, things like that. But otherwise, no matter how, you know, much, you know, the government or, you know, opposition leaders in that sense, might try to stifle our growth. I mean, right. Americans have spoken and our industry is just, it's progressing at a speed, I think much faster, you know, than really anything else, at least I've seen in my lifetime, you know?
You know, social media, there's obviously a lot of craziness going on there, but however, I don't think this lot of what happened in this industry would be possible without it. I mean, out of sight, out of mind. If you couldn't see what's going on with the possible health benefits, how many people are having really positive medical efficacy from using cannabis and hemp, if you didn't see that, or if it didn't hit it home for most people, it wouldn't have happened. But we live in the information era. So now the proverbial cat's out of the bag. There's no getting it back in. I mean, even with THC still being a Schedule One, with no technically no medical benefit technically, right? But according to the government, it would be interesting to see if they try to reverse course or if anybody.
I think there's a very important distinction there, though. There's no medical benefit per the laws in which they're written in, but there is medical benefit per the research that they've done.
Yeah, right. I mean, there's the don't they have the patent on it as a neuroprotectant? And yeah,
so it's yeah, it's very very interesting. But yeah, you know, it's very interesting. I think we're in the best potential, you know, the best possible industry we could be in right now. Especially because again, it plays into a lot of things that I love: the education piece, being a startup, being a startup industry, just
helping people. You're a people person.
I like to think I am. Yeah. Stage right and not, not like to be in public things that way. But yeah, I enjoy, being social. I think that's a big part of like kind of like my humanity, in a sense, connecting with others. So
yeah,
it's enjoyable. And that's probably why I enjoy sales too, is that I'm able to connect with so many people. And that's actually what I really love about sort of like my role with STM and some of the roles I've played in the past, which is that, I think I'd probably be a little miserable, if I had to sit sort of in the back and not really get a chance to socialize, and not just socialize, but like connect with others. And one of the beautiful parts of my role, with STM in particular, is that I'm not just talking to my coworkers and, my employees, on a day-to-day basis. I am talking to, and this is really, really something that I truly love and enjoy. One minute I'm talking to someone in South Africa. Like I actually have a South African distributor. I was just talking.
Oh, well, you also have Franco.
Exactly. Early in their day, I was talking to someone from Tennessee. Then I was talking to someone from California. Then I was talking to someone from Oklahoma. So it's something so unique, Australia. So it's something so unique where the cannabis industry is not just connecting people, in like the traditional sense, just like business to business, it's connecting people with a major underlying factor of cannabis in itself, which is a major, not only like social tool, but just has so much power in itself, and like in its medicinal properties, everything that cannabis means to the people, that are here in the industry for the right reasons, but also the fact that, the cannabis industry connects people who might have never been connected in any other capacity. And it connects them worldwide. Right? I mean, I was talking to someone a couple weeks ago from Colombia. These are very unique I think a lot of industries, you might talk, you know, to people in other regions, but it's different here because of what we're talking about,
right?
You know? And yeah, that's something that I've always found, to be, you know, endearing within the cannabis space and my role, you know, with STM.
Well, I mean, one of the number one ways to just come together, bring people together, is to find common ground. I mean, in a world where everything is so divided right now and so divisive, we would all be in a lot better position if we didn't keep spitting stuff at each other and trying to convert each other, as opposed to finding common ground on the things that we do agree on, and then, you know, talk as humans and progress from there. But if we can agree on we both like weed, then that's a place to start, right? It's hard to battle somebody when, after smoking a joint with them, you know, around a campfire. Like, that's true. Your friend now. Hell, you might be best friends. Doesn't matter what your political party is.
Yeah. It breaks down social norms and social barriers that would otherwise exist. And you know what's funny is that a few months ago, obviously we've had a very tumultuous last few years, but you know, in terms of like, you know, political, you know, divisiveness and everything going on. But one thing I found especially, you know, interesting in a way is that a lot of the big issues, you know, that you know, all sides of the political spectrum tend to think are unique to their own like political party, a lot of these things that appear like there's total different opinions, I forget which organization, so forgive me, but some massive like organization or university did a massive study, you know, across political spectrums, across the whole country, and found that a lot of the major issues that most people argue about, when it comes down to what those issues actually mean and what people are trying to achieve with them, both sides actually wanted the same exact thing. Not with all issues, so right. Certainly things that didn't match, but some of the bigger issues that we would think and we're made to kind of think that there's a lot of divisiveness happening, the core of it people agree upon. And that's so crazy because, you know, we're in an environment, you know, where, you know, divisiveness makes news and you know, intrigues people's need for some sort of like weird, twisted entertainment. So I think, you know, that's the one beautiful thing about cannabis. It brings us together, and it is hard. It's hard to be mad at someone when you just smoke the joint with them. You know, it breaks down. you know, I go back to this too. You know, people, especially who oppose marijuana or hemp, you know, cannabis as a whole, is, you know, how many people do you know, that smoked a joint and then got into a fist fight, right? As opposed to like being at a bar, you know, and getting into a fist fight. You know, you meet people from all areas of the world, and you're able to bond over something that is not just general common ground. It's common ground over something that can literally change the world. And I don't feel like that's corny in any way to even say that, because truly we know that plants and you know, different species of plants can literally change the world, which is one thing I've been doing a lot of research into, and as another passion of mine, which is like psilocybin. So things like that.
Well, that could open up a can of worms, because that appears to be kind of the next cannabinoid, as in it's not a cannabinoid, but what I mean is with THC being legal in a lot of different states and CBD being legal nationally via the farm bill and stuff like that, you know, it's been decriminalized in Oakland. So yep. It's starting to, the first step, similar to how cannabis went, was decriminalization, then establishing kind of legal medical use, and then eventually possibly, you know, recreational use in markets. But yeah, I've been kind of very interested in that one. And it seems like it's going to go that route. Although, at least when I look at it, it seems like it's going to be definitely more controlled. I mean, believe me, you have too much psilocybin and it can be a hell of a lot worse than having too much THC.
I just got an email from CanTrade about my products.
Oh, you did?
I did.
You better make sure they look good.
I know.
You better answer that. That's an important email. I think you should
you know, I think with psilocybin, I think 100% it's going to be not the new cannabis in terms of it being, you know, similar to cannabis or anything in that realm, but very similar in the sense that there'll be like this big boom and it'll be, it's almost its own industry. The only challenge that I really foresee, you know, within the psilocybin space is that because it has a lot of, there is, you know, a lot more risk to it, not in the sense that people are dying, but like you said, you know, it had to be in more controlled environments, unless people are microdosing, of course, which
right.
We wouldn't have to worry about that.
The hero's journey.
The hero's journey. I think the unfortunate part is that, you know, one of the unfortunate aspects of cannabis legalization, bear with me here, is that it led the way to psilocybin, but because the cannabis industry has been so formalized in many ways, it kind of like gave, you know, a lot of these larger like pharmaceutical companies kind of like the confidence that they know psilocybin will be coming soon. And so I think it'll be very much, I don't really foresee it being something that will be kind of open to everybody like cannabis has been.
It's going to be a lot more closed off. It's going to be a lot more heavily regulated, risk reasons. Other one is cultivation reasons. I mean, the dealing with, mycorrhizal, is that it? I think that's right. But basically dealing with how you cultivate mushrooms is you need a far more sterile environment.
Yeah.
It's not like, you know, weed and hemp where you just, or cannabis and hemp/hemp where you're just tossing it in the ground and let Mother Nature do the work. Obviously that's not the way to grow the best blend, but that in a lot of regions and a lot of soil types that will work.
Yeah, no, that's true. As well, it grows in the mountains at the end of the day. I mean, so do mushrooms, but of course there are different implications to, you know, something that, you know, it's grown incorrectly. I mean, it's honestly the same thing kind of with, you know, hemp and marijuana. I mean, there's a lot of like, you know, like powdery mildew, you know, PM and different things that can cause, you know, issues or have harmful effects. But yeah, I think that's like the only downside in the sense is that a lot of people are jumping in from, you know, these massive corporations, but at the same time, it might not be a huge benefit to, you know, people who are looking to maybe have a business in there, but I do think it'll really greatly benefit the consumer simply just due to, you know, access. And I listened to this podcast the other day. Actually, my kid brother put me on to the Joe Rogan podcast.
Your kid brother, episode. You mean, was this the one that you, that gave you weed back in the day?
No,
this is your kid brother, so not your big brother.
Yeah, I know. This is my teenage brother.
Okay. So teenage, so much younger. I just thought you were referring to one of your brothers, not the very young one.
No. I have two older and one younger. My younger brother is about 10 years younger than me. He put me on to this one episode of, he's been talking about the Joe Rogan podcast in general. And then, I don't know, I came across this one episode in particular with a gentleman by the name of Paul Stamets. And he is like the leading mycologist, like one of the leading mycologists in the world. And I think it's episode like 1035.
I've listened to it. I know which one you're talking about.
You've listened to it?
Yeah. Yeah. Well, I mean, Joe talks about mushrooms all the time. Dimethyltryptamine, psilocybin, all the above. And I've listened to that one. Yeah, very, very interesting. I mean, a lot of positive benefits. Not everybody has to take a hero's journey. You can have a lot of benefits, you know, with microdosing. And I've actually personally heard a lot of anecdotal experiences. So not, you know, not studies, but of it helping individuals in certain cases, some cases with physical ailments and some cases with mental ailments, and help them to kind of get through and progress through something that's been a challenge in their life for many years.
Yeah, I've been doing, I've been hearing and doing a lot of reading too about how prevalent it is in like Silicon Valley and how lot of, you know, tech leaders are utilizing like microdosing of different substances, very often like psilocybin, you know, for like ultimate brain power, you know, so to speak. And it's interesting because it's not just something that people are abusing, like, you know, say like a stimulant, you know, to stay awake and focus. This is more like, finding ways to feed your brain and have like neurogenesis, like have your brain form, you know, new pathways. And it's So I think I'll always find some sort of, you know, place in the cannabis space and in the psychedelic and you know, natural plant space. But yeah, it's very intriguing. I'm excited to see such growth.
Excellent. So we've been on for over an hour and a half. It's definitely time to start wrapping things up. Now I got a question for you. Sure. This might kind of coincide with the psilocybin talk that we just kind of dove into a little bit, but what does the next, say, 5 and 10 years look like for yourself? And say, what does that also look like for, like, what do you view the industry looking like in 5 to 10 years? And, you know, does STM have plans in that space? I mean, you're an equipment manufacturer. The mushroom market is going to, at some point, and I think I actually tried to buy mushroommarket.com a while back, but are they going to need STM in their space? So sorry, I always throw a lot at everybody for the last question. So no, take like whatever that. You like, whatever parts you want to answer or not answer.
That's totally fair. You know, in terms of STM and, you know, being in the psilocybin industry, you know what, to be totally frank, Mark, this has never crossed my mind until you just mentioned it. Didn't even cross my mind. Well, maybe just because there's a lot of correlations between sort of like, you know, like the boom suddenly of like both industries. I didn't really apply that like as a crossover into STM, but frankly speaking, you know, our company is growing rapidly and, you know, we have a lot of things going on. And I think, you know, if I'm still involved in some capacity down the line, who knows how long that might be, right? When psilocybin is legalized and there are, you know, post-harvest processing needs, I think we would be missing out if we didn't maybe explore, you know, that realm. So could that be in the future for STM? I wouldn't say it would be totally out of the realm of possibilities.
So. All right, everybody, you heard it here. STM is getting into psilocybin. Just kidding. Totally joking.
No. We'll see. I mean, I think there's a lot of opportunity there, and that's a great point. We'll see. I think one of the questions that tends to plague me, especially in those you know, shower thought moments, is sort of like where I do see myself in a few years. I think it's a tough question to answer on a number of fronts, mainly because, you know, we have no idea where the industry is going. Another reason is because, you know, I typically don't stay with companies more than a year or two, because my whole job is to come in and get them to like a certain revenue point, you know, and like kind of like build everything from scratch and then hand the reins over to someone else. And STM has really kind of become like my own baby in a way where, you know, I could very well be here for a long time, or it could be time to say, you know what, you know, maybe a couple of years down the line, you know, it's time to hand it off to someone that can, you know, bring it to even bigger, you know, lengths. So I don't know where I'll end up. I think at the end of the day, I want to focus on being somewhere where education, you know, is still very important, which is a lot of what we do at STM. We educate a lot of our customers. And I think that I'll probably end up somewhere between, you know, cannabis and psilocybin, and either owning my own, you know, business, you know, wholly, or, you know, moving to another startup and helping other companies, you know, sort of take their brilliant concepts and help them launch it in a space that is incredibly explosive, like these two. So yeah. I don't know, well, but
I mean, isn't it like the, I forget how the saying goes. I've heard it before, but it's like the destination is not the goal or something. Dang it. Basically the whole process of getting to where you're trying to go. I mean, that's the interesting part. That's the fun part.
Not that, it's the journey.
Yeah. There it is. Thank you, Franco, and all your wisdom.
Yeah. There was another one that kind of hit me the other day. I don't remember the quote, you know, by any means word for word, but I do remember reading something along the lines of, happiness isn't where you're going. It needs to be where you are.
Yeah. That makes total sense. If you're not happy with who you are, what you're doing right now, I mean, you need to basically figure out ways to make changes and be happy with those things. Cause you know, the grass isn't always greener on the other side, right? If you think you're going to be happier across the street, you may find something completely different.
Yeah. You might find out they're using a fertilizer that they shouldn't be.
Yeah. Those damn, or they're doctoring their COAs and they've got pesticides in their crop. Yeah. Those assholes.
That's what they seem.
So verify, trust, but verify.
Yes. That is literally on my board. It's funny that you
it says it right there. Didn't one of the presidents say that? Wasn't it like Reagan or something?
I don't know. I heard it somewhere recently. I can't remember where I heard it, but I heard it somewhere and I was like, oh, that's actually a really good, you know, way to look at things, you know, good quotes. I wrote it down.
Well, this has been great. I mean, we went through a ton of stuff, ton of random stuff. It's all right though, because like I said, this is just kind of wherever the conversation takes us, you know, but either way, I've got to jump off. I got to go pick up little man. And this was once again a blast, but Jessica, we'll jump on. We'll talk more. So we can all be on the same page.
All right. Sounds like a plan.
See you, Jessica.
You too, Franco. So nice to meet you.
Jessica, get back to your wife and congratulations. Shoot me a text after, you know, when things settle down.
Right. Okay.
Cool. Later, guys.
Okay. Bye, guys.
All right. Bye.